Beth Dooley grew up shopping farm stands with her grandmother and learning from her how to cook by instinct. Curiously, though, what actually turned her into a food writer was a move to frigid Minnesota with her husband. And unlike a lot of us who came here and complained about winter nonstop for several years, Beth dug in. She cooked to make this new place home, and she wrote. In little time, she knew nearly every farmer in the farmer's market. Soon, Beth was walking their fields with them, working with artisans, and teaching kids how to plant and grow their food and how to cook it. And she wrote, and continues to write, for magazines, newspapers, blogs, and cookbooks. Her new book is In Winter's Kitchen, Growing Roots and Breaking Bread in the Northern Heartland. Beth, it's so good to have you here.
Oh, Lynn, thank you. It's lovely to be here. Thanks.
I understand that when you were in school, you were born and raised in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
And you would secretly tuck the joy of cooking into your school bag and pull it out and hide it during study hall as you read it.
I did. I read it like a novel. You know,
how old were you?
Oh, I think I was about 14 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I was fascinated by it. And of course, that first joy had things in it like how to cook a squirrel. You know, I mean,
yes, that's true. Yeah, right.
So it really engaged my imagination in a pretty profound way. And I also found reading recipes so comforting. I think it may be because a recipe is really just a memory of a happy meal. And so they're stories with happy endings. And I would read them and imagine what that meal would be like and then get excited and sometimes try and recreate them. But I just entered another world. And when you're reading recipes from not only your own country, but other countries, you get a glimpse of different cultures too. And that was fascinating to me.
So you get married, you go to college, and you're dropped in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And you have some preconceptions about what you might be facing?
Totally. I mean, this is the land of soy and corn where my father couldn't remember how to pronounce the name of the city we'd arrived in. He kept calling it Mindianapolis. And my brother gave us that poster that the New Yorker had on the front cover that showed LA on one side and New York on the other side with nothing in between except the thin ribbon that was the Mississippi
River. Yeah, I remember
that
poster. Yeah.
And so I thought, wow, where am I? And it took me a long time to get my legs here. I mean, the first place we went to eat out was Becky's Cafeteria. I don't know if you remember that at
all. No, I don't.
Oh, it was one of those places where it was velvet curtains. You walked in, and at the host stand, there was a Bible open to Jeremiah 13:42 or something, and big, long steam table. And the food wasn't terrible, but it was steam food, but they always had beautiful pastries. They had wonderful pies and things like that, and really good bread. And I thought that was interesting. And then I hit the farmer's market, and I felt like I'd come home because the farmer's market was sort of representative of the kinds of food that I had eaten with my grandmother. That, you know, I would go and meet these farmers and talk to them about their crops and what was happening in their fields and bring this food home. And all of a sudden, food tasted like food again, because I was of the generation, and so many of us are, where we have this vague memory of farm fresh food, and then we live through this period of convenience food.
Yeah.
And when you taste something that's grown locally, there's a tremendous difference. And that kind of made me curious about why that's so. You know, then you begin to peel back the onion and try to understand what defines flavor, and that leads you into all this other information around food. And so that's sort of what happened.
That was the path.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the book, you write about individual foods.
Yes.
Apples, wheat,
right.
Chestnuts. But what ends up happening in each one of those chapters is, I mean, you're talking about government policy.
Yes.
You're talking about what farmers deal with. You're talking about things from several different points of view.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you really started digging.
Yeah.
Was there any one thing that set that off?
There was. You know, the first real big project I had, because having fallen in love with reading cookbooks, I decided early on I really wanted to write cookbooks.
Right.
And I got to be friends with Lucia Watson. Lucia's restaurant was really the first farm-to-table restaurant in the Twin Cities. And Lucia was known as the Alice Waters of this region.
Mm-hmm.
And so she also understood, too, as a chef, that there was a big difference in the carrot that she bought from California versus the carrot that was grown down the street, just flavor-wise. And her whole intent was to provide and cook with the best food she possibly could. And as I began to meet the farmers that she was dealing with and understanding both her point of view as a restaurateur and also my issues as a home cook, how that might affect, you know, what happens to our local economy mm-hmm. when we are more intentional about who we buy from.
One of the things you talk about, though, is although you're writing about Minnesota, mm-hmm. you talk about how this could be anywhere in the United States.
That's exactly right. And that was one of the impetuses for writing the book. Just being curious about where things come mm-hmm. from and beginning to ask questions revealed so much to me. There's so much that is right here available to us, things that grow right outside our back door, things that people are doing that are really phenomenal, very innovative, really interesting.
Give me some instances. They'll be about Minnesota, could be around the corner from anyone.
I mean, one person we don't hear very much about in Minnesota is a professor named Don Weiss, who's been engaged with the Land Stewardship Project, Wes Jackson's work on perennializing wheat, for instance. And it's phenomenal. And that's a crop that would really change the wheat industry, because Don's argument is that we can't ask farmers to change their practices overnight, but what we can do is begin to research those plants that will make a dramatic difference both in the quality of our food but how our land is used. But we have to give them different crops. And so that's been the trajectory of his life for the past 30 or 40 years. He's a phenomenal human being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a lot of this work that's going on that we don't hear about because it's not quite big news yet.
Yeah.
But it will be.
So you're saying that what they're working on for all this time is a wheat that you plant and it comes back every year. You don't have to buy seeds.
Correct.
You don't have to replant.
That's exactly right. Think about it. Wheat's a grass.
And our lawn comes back every year.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Huh.
It's a phenomenal product. It's called Kernza. And we'll start seeing it in the grocery stores pretty soon.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if it could be a perennial, that would make such a difference. It would save people huge amounts of money.
It would be huge.
And work.
And work. And it would be so much gentler on our land because you're not, you know, tilling and ripping things out every year in order to replant. And you don't need the same amounts of fertilizers and pesticides as you do with today's wheat.
Fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
Beth, thanks so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you, Lynn.
Beth Dooley is author of In Winter's Kitchen, Growing Roots and Breaking Bread in the Northern Heartland. And Beth left us with her favorite recipe for mashed potatoes. It was her grandmother's, and you can find it, Best Mashers, at splendidtable.org.